Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. On today's show, a deep dive into Cavs Hornets from myself and Evan Demerle, and then Evan and I talked about the latest on Kevin Love and everything going on with the trade value of the Cavs power forward, who we all sort of expect to be traded at this point by the February trade deadline. That's coming up today on today's Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, Evan, let's get into it. The Cavs lose to the Charlotte Hornets 109-106, a game that I think they frankly should have won. One of the few times in the post-LeBron era that I feel like the Cavs should have won the game, that they kind of cost themselves a win. I'll run through some of the key stats here. Colin Sexton has his best game in quite a while, at least in some ways. 21 points for him on 8 of 17 shooting, including a 4 of 7 from 3. Made more threes in this game than he did the entire month of December. 2 assists for him as well. Darius Garland had 14 and 8 assists. Osman with 17 points. Love with 18 and 8. Tristan with 6 and 11. And John Henson adding 10 off the bench. KPJ adding 9 off of the bench. Dante Exum, 7 points, 5 boards, 2 assists. Did make 1 3-pointer once again. Evan, what to you when you look at this game, which again, I at least feel like it's the Cavs should have won, that they kind of cost themselves late, cost themselves with letting Rozier and Devontae Graham kind of get loose and get off kind of the shots those guys have been hunting all night. Those two combined for 46 points in this one. What to you were some of the main talking points coming out of this loss?
No, I totally agree. It's the Cavs definitely snatched defeat out of the jaws of victory in this one, and it was just disappointing, frustrating, I guess, are words are throwing around, and you really don't say that often. Like, I'm trying to think. The last time the Cavs lost a game this close was when it was against Philly, and that was still a fun game, but like, granted, this game had some fun moments for the young guys and Kevin Love included, but it's just super frustrating, like you said, just the defensive miscues and mishaps at the end of the game just allow Terry Rozier and Devontae Graham to get loose and get hot, and then Devontae Graham hit the game-winning three, but I think Rozier was the one who clinched it with the free throws, but either way, just like a little disheartening all around, but I mean, I guess when you have two crappy teams playing each other, you got to try and glean something positive from it. And thankfully, Sexton, Garland, Osman, Exum, Porter all had good games. And those are obviously players that are going to be a part of this thing going forward. And then you have Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, who are both have been solid the entire season. And then John Henson, who's been a breath of fresh air coming off the bench, along with Larry Nance, who obviously only had 2 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals. But, I mean, just the dynamic of that bench unit has just been a lot of fun to watch, and I think those two together have been part of that. But, yeah, no, overall just a frustrating game because the Cavs easily could have had this one, but it just they kept let Scary Terry and the Hornets stay in it. So,
yeah, I think maybe a team that has a little more seasoning, like maybe if a version of this team exists next year, you know, Garland's in year 2, Sexton's in year 3, et cetera. Like maybe this team does pull out this win. Maybe that's just a game where they're better on defense and whatnot.
Yeah.
I would say this, Evan, just from scanning Twitter quickly in this one, I would say like, I want to talk about Garland because I thought he was kind of the most impressive guy for me out of the young guys in this one. But what did you make of Sexton's night overall? I found him when I was checking the pulse of different people to be as sort of as it's kind of become. It was a little polarizing for some.
No, I'd agree with polarizing. If you want to look at the box score across it, Sexton was tied with Tristan for minus 18 for the worst plus minus of the team, and Garland led the team with plus 17, just to throw that out there. But no, I mean, you mentioned it in the opening there. Sexton was able to connect on 4 3-pointers, and I think it's the first time in quite a while he's connected on more than 2, possibly even just multiple in general in a game, and that was nice, but it's just a mixed bag with Colin sometimes. Like, you got to take the good with the bad, and if he's found a little bit of his shooting stroke again, I guess I'll take it. Maybe it's the magic of adding a shooting sleeve to his wardrobe now, but yeah, no, I agree with. I can see why it was polarizing. Like, he still has like those little hiccups and frustrating mistakes that he makes throughout every game. But like I said, it was just this is just a crappy loss, and you got to glean something positive from this. And that I'm gonna hold on to him being 4-7 from 3-point range, because it was a bummer for quite a while to just watch him hoist up 3-point attempts and watch them either rim out, brick, or just airball. So
yeah, take I agree what you can get. I agree with that. I would say for me with him, I thought his first quarter was maybe my favorite first quarter that I've seen from him, or any single quarter I've seen from this year. I thought defensively he was good. I thought he was shooting well off ball. The shot looked a little like it had a little more arc back into it. I liked in this game how we saw him kind of cutting a little bit more. That is remains one of my favorite uses of him, is that if they're going to take the kind of the backdoor cuts that they ran with Jordan Clarkson sometimes and run them with Colin Sexton. I love that, because Colin Sexton is this really fast, twitchy athlete. If you get him moving, that's going to be a successful thing for him. But I think when you come down to it, it ends up being, I think, the playmaking that becomes your concern with him again. He only had 2 assists that he did make, to his credit. And I don't want people were very mad at my mentions when I tweeted about his assists the other day. Two assists for him. He had 2 passes to Dele that were wide open catch and shoot threes. He made the right read. Dele missed the shot. Okay. I'll give him some credit for those, right? So he still has 4 turnovers. But there's twice in the last like 3 minutes. I'll have to go back and watch and look at my notes to kind of verify the exact time frame there. But if you go back and watch, there's a play they ran late where they've been running that double screen action up top where whomever the ball handler is. Tristan and Love set the screens. He just barreled by it, threw up kind of a bad shot. If he waits like half a second, or just more aware about what's developing around him and reads the amount of bodies being paid attention to him, Kevin Love is open for a three above the break. And if the Hornets had happened to rotate back to Love, Jetty's open in the corner for a three. He needs to see that stuff if he's going to be initiating late in the game. And then I think he almost makes a three at the buzzer that would have tied it, sent it to overtime. But he also made a really bad decision before that, and then driving into lane kind of full stop when Love was open, kind of just forced an unnecessary shot. He needs to just be more patient in those situations. I think overall I liked a lot of the stuff he did. There are some nitpicks, and I think the two things for me that will just probably kind of be most emblematic is the 3-point shooting is big, but he made some kind of bad decisions, and kind of his awareness on the court was a little funky when it really, really mattered.
No, I would agree. It's funny you mentioned that's another bummer of the season is Matthew Dellavedova is tweaking his shot, and his shots just completely abandoned him at this point. But
he might be washed. Like, I think that we should talk about that at some point, like maybe next week. But I think Deli might just be cooked.
And it's sad because he's a fan favorite and everything, and
he's a beeline favorite.
Yeah, that too. I don't know if he'll get traded because he's an expiring deal, but I don't know what John Beilein's going to do. But I wonder if, just to jump on the Dele thing real quick, I wonder if Dante Exum is eventually going to cede some of Dele's minutes, especially if Wendler comes back.
Wendler being back and healthy would be like a really big thing. Because I think if you had Wendler, you'd be a bigger team. You'd have the shooting that Dele provides. Exum can kind of handle some of those like backup creator duties. Maybe he comes in, like maybe where Dele's been coming in at like the 7-minute mark, maybe that's where Exum comes in.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
And maybe that's the move.
Yeah, I don't know. It depends what this roster is going to look like in 35 days, which is hard to believe the deadline's so close. But and also whenever Wendler comes back. But just to jump back to Colin, it's just like I said, you got to take the good with the bad of him. And he had a good shooting night, but like we said, it's just this season's emblematic, and you're starting to just notice that even though he acknowledged during media day and training camp that, hey, I wasn't a good playmaker last year and I went and studied the film, which is, the most cliche answer you can give for that, but he built that reputation as a workhorse, someone who obviously
is accurate. Like, I do think he is like a workaholic in a way that is like very admirable. It's something I do really like about Colin.
No, I do too. And like, by all accounts, he's a good kid, and like, we'll take his, like, he'll acknowledge, like, listen, I didn't have a good night shooting, but he also has a mentality where he said it multiple times after games where he just forget, if he has a bad shooting night, he just forgets every bad shot and just tries to shoot it again. And like, I wrote about this actually in the piece that went up today for Forbes, but I said, we're starting to have a large enough body of work for Sexton at this point that maybe we need to realize that he isn't the point guard of the future for the Cavs. He might be better suited as a six man. And I think, like you said, getting him in those looks, especially in cuts, like more in that Jordan Clarkson role, is a smart decision, because going forward, I'm firmly in the camp that he long-term is the team's six man, and like, it's fine. I guess is it frustrating that he still doesn't move the ball and he makes a lot of these just small mental mistakes that sometimes result in spectacular disasters? Yeah, it's super frustrating, but he's a sophomore player, and I guess people just need to learn to be patient with him. But I think it's just, you know, I kind of saw this coming from watching him for the last year and some change at this point, but it is what it is.
Yeah. We'll end the first section here on that. I'll just say this two things. Number one, I do think Colin has a lot of attributes that are good. I think us nitpicking at him is more so just like stuff that is just sort of kind of very obvious when you watch him. And it's not just like us blog boys saying that. Like, Zach Lowe has dedicated his 10 part, who is like the smartest basketball writer alive, has written about this. So this isn't just like two like hating blog boys. Get out of my mentions. Number two, there's enough data with 82 games as a rookie, and then so far we have this year. To me, that's enough data for us to be in, like, enough film and enough whatever you want to say, like, some of this is a thing that he has now. Like, it is not – like, he can be young, and he can have, like, things that he – like, that he's bad at right now. Like, those mm-hmm. those two things don't have – like, just because you're young doesn't, like, excuse you being struggle with certain things. Like, you're not – like, your whole DNA as a player, it doesn't – like – people, I think, have this idea. Some people, I should say, have this idea that, like, you as a young player can just break all of your bad habits. I don't think that's really true. I think you do, like, you have DNA as a player, and you can adjust it. You can improve on stuff. But, like, sometimes there's just stuff in your game that it is what it is. And it's about how you can, I think, make it malleable to a point where it isn't as much of a concern in, like, 3 years or something like that. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to talk about Garland. Perhaps we should do full-on Sexton pod next week. I know I have some – I've been working on a longer analysis kind of piece on that with some quotes in there, so hopefully I'll get that done early next week and we can talk about him in general. But today's show is brought to you by my bookie. Are you the type of fan that knows football so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, my bookie is the place for you, because they let you turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between football season – the NFL playoffs obviously are just starting, the NBA, college basketball, it's time to get off the sideline and get on the action with MyBookie. And if you're going to bet this season, MyBookie is the place to do it. If you want to try a parlay, you can do that there. If you want to have a couple big favorites, a parlay is a great option, because they lay multiple games together for a much bigger payout. You just go watch Uncut Gems and you're going to learn exactly what a parlay is. It's wonderful. You can win big like Howard. And if you're tired of watching the games from the couch with nothing to gain, MyBookie wants to help you take your mind off everything else and get it back on the game. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you're going to get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That is promo code LOCKEDON to activate that offer. And you visit that by visiting mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, get paid. Use promo code LOCKEDON. We're going to be right back. All right, Evan, we're back. Let's talk about Darius Garland. Darius Garland, I thought, was the guy on the floor tonight. I thought KPJ had some good moments. There was good stuff for a lot of different guys.
Mm-hmm.
This was a great Darius Garland game.
No, I totally agree. And I think back when they had that stretch where they played, I think the order was Atlanta, Charlotte, Memphis or something like that. But Darius Garland also had a solid stretch of that against them too. And you're starting to see more and more that he's just looking more comfortable and looking more confident, especially as the lead guard. And 14 points, he only scored 12 in the first half. But the biggest thing for me, though, is he had 8 assists and 1 turnover. And I know turnovers are something he struggled with throughout the season. So just him taking care of the rock was definitely fun to watch. And it's just, you know, this is probably, I'd say at least, the best all-around game Garland's had so far this season. And I hope it's something to build off of, especially with Oklahoma City and Chris Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander coming into town on Saturday. So that'll be a good test for him on the offensive side of the ball, that defensive matchup. But no, this is something definitely good to build off of. And I think it's just it's the case I keep making that maybe Garland is the point guard, the lead point guard of the future. And just seeing him act more as a primary initiator and looking more comfortable with his teammates out there is just definitely a lot of fun to watch.
I think it's pretty clear that if you're going to bank on one of these two guys being the, like, the quote unquote kind of lead guy, it's Darius. Darius, I think, has evolved as he sees the floor a little bit better. He makes, I'm going to find the exact kind of play here, but he had some plays in this one that I was like, oh, first he had that 30-foot three pointer that he missed early in the game. Mm-hmm. He had that really nice read where he got into the lane in the first quarter, got past that Kevin Love pick, hits Jetty for a spot up three. He had a good catch and shoot three in this one as well. Had that nice drive that Nance then tip packed it to Dante Exum for the catch and shoot three. He had some good positions where he went ISO. There was a nice lob I had in the second quarter with like a minute to go where he got the lead back up to 11. Another reason why they should have won this game. They led this game by double digits. Like, yeah. Come on, guys. But he got into the lane, didn't force it, found Tristan for a nice lob. That was a good kind of look for him. My favorite play of the night for him, if you go back and watch this, is about 9-11 in the fourth quarter. He head fakes a pass to KPJ, and he drives, lobs it to John Henson.
Mm-hmm. I was actually just about to say that. That was one of my favorite plays he made that tonight.
That is something he was not doing at the beginning of the year. That is not something that is in Colin Sexton's repertoire. Colin Sexton plays at 100 miles an hour. Garland plays at this much slower, kind of patient pace. That allows for him to do stuff like that. He took some knocks for his passing early. I think those were fair. I think this is something in his skill set that was overall undersold coming into this year. This game to me is proof that like this dude really can do that. And the Cavs have kind of asked him to do that. And the 3-point shooting is coming a little bit. His percentage is already pretty good. The passing is coming. This was a really good Garland game. And I don't know how you could read this other than like being very thrilled with what he did.
No, I totally agree. And I'm very happy that I can just kind of walk away with the fact that, that he just, it's overall just a solid game. And like I said, he led the team in plus minus tonight. And I know it's not the best stat to gauge how the night went, but it's something to say, especially when he's a rookie. And like you said, Colin Sexton, let me jump back. They're just both different players. And like Sexton, like you said, plays 100 miles an hour. But I think just as time goes on, we're starting to see Garland get more and more comfortable. And sure, is he going to have a couple stinkers between now and the next time he has a good game? Absolutely. But these are just games I'll circle when I look back, or just when I want to take note on reviewing his rookie season. That said, maybe Cleveland was right drafting another point guard a second summer in a row. And I know I didn't expect him to be such a solid, not a solid playmaker, but he's showing growth and potential in that department. Because I think J. Kyle Mann is his username, but he did a scouting report on Garland, and he pointed out the fact that, like, when Garland is at Vanderbilt, they asked him what kind of player he was. He's like, oh, I'm more of a pass-first point guard. And he just said, I don't really see it with Darius Garland, but we're starting to see more and more that if the shot isn't there and he's starting to have confidence in his shot again, like you said, he took a 30-foot three-point attempt at one point. But, you know, it's just a good compliment as well. Like, if the shot isn't there, he's trying to make the right read and he's trying to make the right pass. And it's just a comfort thing, maybe. And just, you know, he's 19 years old and barely has any collegiate experience. And he's getting thrown into fire to play against grown men. It's just been a lot of fun to watch his development. And, I mean, like I said, he's probably going to lay a couple eggs between now and then. But you got to just be patient with him. And I guess that's what I just keep preaching this entire year is, like, this Cavs team isn't very good. Let's just be honest. They're 10-24, and they're circling that. They're circling the drain in terms of the lottery. So you gotta take something positive, and like little moments like this are definitely something you can take with you to the end of the year.
Yeah, third worst record in the league right now, tied with the Knicks at 10-24. The Warriors and the Hawks are both worse. The Charlotte Hornets have But then they have 14-23. Just for some context on Garland for the season, according to Cleaning the Glass, he's in 20th percentile, so that's like near the bottom fourth of the league in assist usage ratio. Sexton is lower than that. And then in turnover percentage, Garland is in the second percentile, so that's in the bottom 2% of all guards in the league and players in his position. Those are things that check out from his overall season. You don't have the ability to really break this down any further as I'm just looking at it real quick here, but this is something that I do think he's really improved at. I think this is a game. Again, you can say that. Any other standout things for you? For me, the only other thing really is I really like what I'm seeing out of, and you mentioned this already to your credit, the Exum, Garland, Nance, Henson, KPJ bench unit is something I really like. Mm-hmm. I like how defensive it seems to be. I like that it is feisty, plays with a lot. It plays very quick. It passes the ball. It moves it. That yeah. I really, really liked. And I thought the ball, for the most part, did move pretty well in this game. What else stood out to you?
The ball did move well in the first half, I will say that.
Yeah, they had, okay, first half is probably fair.
They had 14 assists on 20 made field goals in the first half, but overall they had 26 assists on 41 made field goals, which, you know, it's good. It's definitely good because it's a team that, you know, doesn't move the ball very well sometimes. But like you said, like you just touched on, that second unit's just a lot of fun to watch. And Ben Dowsett, when he was on, was telling us, or telling me at least, that, you know, Dante Exum, he's a little bit of a mystery box right now. And, you know, it's just been a lot of fun. Yeah, a lot of fun. But yeah, I'm just, you know what, I'm going to lean in on it all the way. It's been a lot of fun to watch him slowly kind of regain a little bit of his confidence again. And there is that one sequence, I think it was in the third or fourth quarter, when he had an outlet pass for a quick dunk, and then he grabbed a Charlotte miss, and then went coast to coast, and he tried to attempt a layup and missed it pretty badly. But, you know, I'd rather him try and regain his confidence and his feeling comfortable with his new teammates, because like we touched on, he might be taking over for Dellavedova in those reserve point guard minutes, and his length and size pair really well in that unit with KPJ and Garland. And even if you sub Garland out for Sexton, it's still a fun unit to play with. It just adds a little bit of a different dimension to it because there's maybe not as much ball movement at the lead guard spot. But no, that second unit is just a lot of fun to watch, and it's when the Cavs start to blow it a little bit and the second unit comes in, and like you said, they're feisty defensively, and it's a nice little mix, and it kind of reminds me of that bench unit that had Wayne Ellington, Luke Walton, Mo Spates, and
the iconic
one. I think Cavs a blog called them the Herculoids, just to date it just way back when. But no, it's just like, that unit was just so much fun to watch, and it's just like small moments like this. You got to take something fun out of this, and I'll keep watching this bench unit try its best. Maybe they won't blow you away, but hey, at least you'll have fun watching it.
Yeah, I think that's right. Also, shout out to Jetty Osman, 7 of 8 in this one, 3 of 4 from three. Good to see him at least doing some being a little more assertive on offense, and I thought finishing pretty well. Okay, one last break, and then Evan and I are going to be back with more Locked On Cavs. All right, Evan, we're back. Last one here, last section of this podcast for Friday, January 3rd. Kevin Love, let's just touch on this. I mentioned it briefly in a cold open to the show the other day. Apparently, he is kind of back available on the market. I don't think he was ever off the market, but Mark Stein of ESPN reported that there is, I believe, to directly quote him, renewed optimism that a deal with Love will get done between now and the trade deadline, which is 35 days away, 35 days away at this point. When you see that, and obviously he didn't, there's been no other information as far as I can tell. Carter Rodriguez, shouts to him, the better half of the chase down, was like being like, Mark, like, don't leave us hanging here. Like, please give us more. I know from poking around this a little bit, there's at least one team that you would think is a logical fit that at least a portion of the front office doesn't like think it's worth doing for salary cap reasons more than anything else. But I do think there are deals out there to be done. What do you think of where we're at with this ongoing kind of Kevin Love is probably going to get traded in the next month kind of dialogue?
Well, it's a bit of a bummer because it's the last member of the big three going out, and you know, I again touched on this on my piece. We're recording this on Thursday, and it went live today on Forbes. They said Kevin has constantly been circulated in trade rumors and discussions from probably the moment he touched ground in Cleveland, and you know, was always just a constant professional, you know, always dry and sarcastic about it, saying it's nothing new for him. But now that the reality is actually here, it's just kind of sad that his time in Cleveland's coming to an end. But I mean, it's going to benefit all parties involved, because I think I'd rather see Kevin Love playing for a playoff contender or even a title contender at this point. But just to jump ship on that, I agree. I think the Cavs will say for the longest time they were adamant that he wasn't available, and they want to keep him around and have him see this through, like this rebuild through, and have him guide these young Bucks through the playoffs and maybe have a few more runs. But I think it'd be remiss of this front office not to have him available in trade discussions at this point. But I think it's just going to reach ahead at leading up to this deadline. And like Mark Stein said, it kind of breathed new life back into it. My party wonders if that maybe is Kevin Love's agent talking to Stein, saying like, hey, we might have a deal in the works here, just to kind of like maybe put a little external pressure on Cleveland's front office, because we all know at this point that Kobe Altman runs a pretty tight ship, and most trade stuff that comes out either comes out of left field, like that Kyle Korver trade was a bit of a surprise just on the timing of it, or even that Jordan Clarkson trade to Utah. Like, I think I was talking to either you or Justin Rowan about it, but I said I was watching the game with my parents on the night Clarkson was traded, and I said, oh, whoa, I'll be right back. I have to go touch base on this because I didn't expect it. But I think Kevin Love's days are numbered in Cleveland, and it's a bit of a bummer. But I, like you said, I've heard some things too about teams that are interested, and I do know there is one team that has legitimately entered trade discussions with Cleveland. But we'll see what happens, and I think people might need to be ready, though, for the fact that the Cavs may not get a return that is mind-blowing just based on like how Cleveland fans overvalue every single one of their trade assets.
Yeah, I don't quite know what they're going to get back. But it, to me, just feels like it's inevitable at this point.
No, I would agree too. And we can go through teams that we'd like to see Kevin on, but
Portland's, I know, like, just the one that jumps out. Yeah. Portland is just like the one. Like, I know people have thrown on Miami. I don't like see him just fitting in what they're doing. They want to be a cap space team next couple of years. Like, that's something that Pat Riley is going to want to do.
Pat Riley's going to want to go Giannis hunting, but
yeah, like I think a lot of people are going to punt on stuff because they want to have cap space in a year or two. So good 2021. No one really cares about the 2020 free agency class because it's not good. No. It's really not good. The Phoenix is a team that makes some sense. I'll say that's where like some of the, I think the disinterest from my understanding kind of comes from. Even though there, I think, is a logical kind of argument for that being a landing spot. I talked to some people I know who, not in the Mavs organization, but like know how the Mavs think pretty well, and they don't think Dallas would kind of package some of its stuff together to kind of get a third shot. They're probably going to go Giannis hunting as well. That's kind of one of the things that's out there, which would, to Luka and Giannis on the same team is just like terrifying.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, let's not have that happen. But when I keep just thinking about this, it's Portland is the team that just ends up making the most sense to me over and over and over again.
I agree.
And like, if the Cavs get like 2 second round picks, Hassan Whiteside and Zach Collins, I think you can live with that. And I know, I think that's enough. I think that's enough at this point. I think that's what the market is.
No, I definitely agree with that. Like, we're jumping around a few teams. Like you said, Phoenix, they probably want to maintain their salary cap. But man, that pie-in-the-sky offer of Tyler Johnson, Dario Saric, and maybe Mikal Bridges, like, that would be great. But the Suns have also fallen off a cliff after they were the darlings of NBA Twitter to start the season. So I doubt they're going to be wanting to move assets, or especially draft picks at this point, to try and squeeze into that seventh, eighth seed in the Western Conference playoffs. Because, I mean, what's the point? You're just going to get bounced by the Lakers or the Clippers in the first round. But
I get shellacked.
Exactly. But it's just, it's a bit of a bummer, because I remember I said this summer, after the whole free agency bonanza that the market for Kevin Love might have opened up. But now that you really look, like, start reading the tea leaves a little bit, and you've heard things, and I've heard things, and people we know have heard things, maybe the market's not really there. It's starting to dry up a bit. And Portland makes a lot of sense. I know Kevin's been linked to Denver a few times. That doesn't make as much sense because Paul Millsap's there, but maybe you send Paul Millsap to Cleveland and then the Cavs try to flip Millsap individually just for additional assets because he's on an expiring contract. And then, or like, if Denver for some reason doesn't like Gary Harris, I think Kobe Altman would gladly take Gary Harris off the Nuggets' hands.
Oh, yeah. Sign me up for Gary Harris.
Same here, but it's just, I mean, maybe you can pry Hernan Gomez or Beasley as well in this package, just because from what I've read and just seen online and like people who are more involved with the Nuggets, I don't think Denver expects to keep either of those two because they both expect to get paid this summer. And a team like Cleveland who has cap space and it's a really dry free agency market, you can take a swing on young players like that. But just to jump back, like, it's just a bit of a bummer because I think the Cavs, like they did with Kyle Korver last year when they traded him to Utah, because for those who don't know, I guess he had a verbal agreement in his contract that if LeBron were to leave town, that the team would honor the fact that he wants to be traded out of here. And he preferred to be traded to a contender. And so I think part of it was Kobe Altman doing his due diligence to do what's best for on behalf of the team, but also doing best what's on the behalf of the player. And I think they're going to try and do something similar for Kevin. And if it's like a playoff team like Portland, the return is going to be, like you said, probably Hassan Whiteside, maybe Zach Collins or another one of their young players, and then just 2 second rounders. And at this point, you have to take it because you got to make sure this trade benefits all parties involved. And I think that's where the stance I'm starting to get at is maybe the Cavs need to pump the brakes a little bit on trying to get the best possible return. I mean, they will get the best possible return. That's stupid of me to say, but at the same time, you want to make sure you do right by a player who was one of the reasons why they have a championship in 2016.
I will say that I also think, like, they clearly need Kevin Love. Like, they lean on him still. Like, I mean, they were in two plays at the end of this game against Charlotte where, like, he missed open threes. It will change the DNA of the team if and when he gets traded. Be it next 30 days, be it next summer. Whenever that happens, the DNA of the Cavs as we know them right now is going to happen.
I totally agree. Like, yeah, I think I had a bit of a rant because the other night somebody, like, people, I get annoyed with Cavs Twitter sometimes, and they say, like, why does Kevin Love have bad body language? He signed up to be here. He's making $30 million a year. And I'm like, it's frustrating because 2 years ago you're in the NBA Finals and now you're on arguably one of the worst teams in the NBA. So I'd be a little frustrated too. Money's not everything. And it's just, I said, I don't even remember where I'm going with this, but it's just a bit of a bummer at this point, and it just sucks it's coming to an end. But the Cavs, you think they're bad now. When Kevin Love's out of town, they're going to be as bad as they were during that 2010-2011 season where it took a last gasp effort against the Clippers to end the longest losing streak in NBA history? I can't remember. Yeah. So but either way, it's just like, it's pretty stinky now, but it's going to get a lot worse once Kevin Love's out of town because he does make this team better. And it just sucks because I like watching good players play for a team that I follow closely. And it's going to suck when, the return is underwhelming, like, as a fan, that's going to stink. But then, like, on the court product is definitely going to take a little bit of a step back. And hopefully the young guys still have fun and still look sharp out there. But, it is what it is, and it's okay.
Yeah, I think that's right. Evan, as this is our final podcast for the week, we'll be back talking about the Thunder and Wolves games on Monday. Any final thoughts for the end of this week here?
That Thunder game is going to be surprisingly tough. Oklahoma City's actually a pretty fun team this year. Just like Chris Paul is a I don't think he's going to get traded because nobody's going to take on that contract, but he's playing like a man who's saying, hey, I still got this, come trade for me. But that'll be him and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander will be a good test for Sexton and Garland. And then Minnesota is a bit of a weird team. Did you see what Gorgui Jiang said about Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns?
No, but I'm sure it's wonderful because Gorgui's a saint.
He said, we're playing really hard right now, and I hope when these guys come back, they can play just as hard as we can do, so we'll be a playoff team. And
his more talented teammates hop on the train. Oh, that's incredible. Yeah.
I'm butchering the quote, but it's just more or less the gist of it. But
This is I love it. I love the NBA.
I do too. It's never a dull moment in the NBA, but no, it'll be a fun all weekend, right. And then just go Cavs.
Okay, I have the full quote here. I'm going to read this as we get out of here. Hopefully this is according to from the Minneapolis Star Tribune from December 31st. Hopefully they can see how hard we play, and when they get back, they can jump on the train. If you have your top players, they see how hard we play when we're limited, and when they come back, they should do even better because they're talented. We don't have the talent they have. They're way talented, and they're better basketball players. So hopefully when they get back, they can give us that same energy. Like, shots fired specifically at Andrew Wiggins is just how I read that. That is actually the game that I'm most interested in seeing just because I want to see how they handle the back-to-back. I do think Saturday will be I think a particularly interesting test for Sexton and Garland. We'll see how they handle it, but we're going to cover that Monday. Evan, as always, it's been a pleasure. This was a weird game, a weird kind of bummer ending, but I'm glad we got through and had a bunch to talk about here.
Yeah, me too, man. Everyone have a good weekend.
All right, everyone. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the Cavs games. And, again, the Cavs, not as chaotic as the Browns. So even if there's chaos, they have a sound organizational structure. We'll talk to you on Monday. Yeah.